Death Spiral, the only anime podcast that Miss Hedge lets use the sharp scissors in class.
What?
We are back. We've watched anime. The lack of sunlight has not exacerbated my depression in any way. I am, in fact, better off in the dark. I love it, actually.
Like a fungus or a mushroom, we like growing where it's cold and damp and full of anime.
It's so good to wake up and not feel my fingers when I'm trying to do my guitar exercises. That's actually good. It's good and I like it.
I mean, I can only imagine that it's a benefit having the nerve endings in your fingers, you know, even less responsive than normal. You know, you can really play until they bleed.
It's really impressive to be able to play the guitar at my level when you don't even know what your hands are doing. That is a level of skill few people will ever reach in their life.
It's true. Maybe a Satriani, maybe a Frusciante, perhaps even a John Micklethor, but not the average man, no.
Those are your pulls, huh?
Those are my pulls.
Not like Jeff Beck, Pat Metheny, I know, Jimi Hendrix.
Buckethead.
You go to Frusciante before those guys? All right, man. No, that's cool. That's cool. Everybody, you know what? Everybody's good in their own way.
Listen, I was just listening to Stadium Arcadium. It was on my mind.
Oh, God. Wow, the death magnetic of funk rock.
Oh.
Gross.
It is gross.
You know, I've been thinking a lot because one of the things I like about watching anime with subtitles, and this was the one thing I will give you for watching regular stuff with subtitles, is that I can practice guitar while I'm watching. You know, like how Squiscar Squig Elf is playing scales in the hot tub.
Oh, yeah. It's just a constant, like, muscle memory, like motor memory for him.
Yes, exactly.
Or the scene where he's playing air scales like while he sleeps.
Yes. That's, yeah. I'm trying to get to that point. And actually, when I do watch stuff sometimes with subtitles, I do that. I do practice like kind of rote memorization stuff like that with my fingers. Because if I can read and pay attention to a show while I am like still playing, it means that I have like actually internalized it to a degree that I'm satisfied with. It's obviously incredibly annoying if anyone else is approximately near me, obviously, but since I'm so desperately alone when I'm watching anime anyway, it kind of works out.
Hey, since you like guitar so much, you should check out this anime about guitar players called Beck Mongolian Chop
Beck
Squad.
Beck Mongolian Chop Squad.
Yeah. Yeah, you can say it that way.
That one's not cool anymore. It's all about Bochy now, right? Or Girls Cry. What is that one?
Girls Band Cry.
Girls Band Cry.
Yeah, that is actually, that one got a much warmer reception than I anticipated it would when we talked about it ages ago on our, you know, stuff that we were looking forward to.
Our anime podcast?
Yeah, on our anime podcast. Hey,
right.
Listeners, you should go check out this podcast called Anime Death Spiral, where they talk about all the coolest anime.
If you like this podcast, you should go listen to our anime podcast.
Yeah, way better. Way funnier.
Did you watch it?
Did I watch Girls Band Cry?
Yeah, did you get around to that?
I watched the trailer. I never watched the any of the episodes, but I did see a fair amount of positive buzz, specifically about people saying that because it's like full on like 3D modeling animation.
Yes, I did notice that.
Yeah, one of the things that kind of drove me away from giving it, you know, some time. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people said that I heard, you know, from other reviewers that the animation looks really good. And I did see some clips of it outside of context, mind you. So
okay.
It may be a just cherry picking the best moments, but it didn't look horrible. It didn't look,
it
say
didn't look
like
horrible.
Oh God, I can never remember the name of that stupid anime about the small business kaiju fighters. Bullbusters. Yeah, it legitimately, what I saw from Girls Band Cry, it looks way smoother and better than any of the 3D stuff in Bullbusters by far.
Yeah, I don't know, man. When I watched that Yoko Taro one, the Death Game Yoko Taro one about the kids with magical cell phones.
Oh, from the, what is the name of that shonen?
Which one? Soul Eater?
Yeah, Soul Eater, with Death the Kid.
Yeah. The thing was, like, even that, and I consider that one to be actually be a pretty successful 3D anime mm-hmm. in terms of just technical ability, it still bummed me out. It still bummed me out. At the end of the day, it feels wrong. It's like putting when, like, you eat a peach and it's a little too mushy, like the texture's just a little too mushy and it feels off.
You want a firm peach.
Yeah, even though it tastes good, you feel like it's gross and you don't want to eat it.
I'm with you. I do understand your anecdote. For me, I seem to encounter...
Well, it's not an anecdote. It's just a comparison.
Listen, I understand your facsimile. Uh-huh. I understand your parable here.
Yes. The parable of the peach. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I don't know. Peaches always end up hard and chalky for me.
And that's good or bad?
Well, it's like anime that ends up hard and chalky.
Oh, I see. Okay. I'm looking at some of the pictures, and maybe it does look better in motion, but mm-hmm. it definitely reads as CGI anime in the screenshots. I'm mm-hmm. not sure if that's the thing that bothers me the most, though. I have to say the girl, because they're all, it's a five-piece, right? There's a lead guitarist, a rhythm guitarist, a bassist, a drummer, and a singer.
I believe that maybe the guitarist doubles as the singer, and they may have a keyboarder.
Oh, she's maybe the keyboardist?
A keyboardist. A keyboardite.
A keyboarders. Yeah. A keyboardite. And, like, they all have, like, their own theme going. Like, one of the girls is wearing a flak jacket. One of them is wearing a power suit with, like, a pencil skirt. One girl is generic anime girl. One girl is, like, goth school girl. And then the other one is just frilly, but frilly and bows and stuff. And, like, I don't know.
I think the frilly one is the keyboardist.
Yeah. At some point, you got to pick. You got
to
pick an aesthetic.
I don't know. It seemed to be a winning strategy for the village people, you know, have one of each type.
Yeah, but they were themed around occupations. That's goofy and fun.
These are themed around girls. You got all the different types of girls here.
Here's the type of girls.
Yeah.
So it's like Kiss, but waifus. They've chosen the different anime aesthetics for each one of the band members. It's not Starface and Devil Child and
he's
Cat
the,
Man.
The demon and
the demon
and the cat. And the Star Child, and Ace Frehley.
Yeah, there's like 50 other ones. There were a bunch of people in Kiss. They cycled people in and out for a long time.
I mean, Kiss is an incredibly good marketing campaign to shill guitar strings. I'll say that.
Hey, you know, that's at the end of the day. I heard some really inflammatory shit from the bassist who everybody hates,
Gene Simmons.
Yeah, he's always saying stupid shit, but he came out the other day and he was like, yeah, you know, Kiss is like real music. All these jazz guys think they're like playing real music, but they're actually complete fucking fakers and bullshit because they don't sell records and Kiss sells records.
Gene Simmons has always been, man, above anything else, like a mask off capitalist. That is his one true quality of him as like a human being.
I kind of respect that, but man, that dude just sucks, man. He sucks.
He's
so
like,
bad.
What are those Star Trek guys? The Ferengi.
The Ferengi. Oh God, no, don't. We can't start comparing Gene Simmons to the Ferengi. Let's get out of this.
Oh no.
This is bad.
No.
I watched some anime, Nate. I watched anime.
Oh, thank God. Okay.
Yeah, I watched. We like anime, and I watched some. Do you know about? That was close. You know how in, like, Netflix is like going all in on One Piece? Like they put all their chips down, and it's like One Piece for days.
I'm protesting season two of live action One Piece. I'm saying that here and now because I was promised a Jamie Lee Curtis casting in this season. And it did not pan out. There was no fruit to that blossom, and I am fucking pissed.
Jamie has way better things to do than fucking live action One Piece.
No,
come
she
on.
Doesn't. Do you know she is the she is a huge One Piece fan.
Yeah, I know, but that doesn't mean you have to make it your job.
Wouldn't you, though, if you could? That's what we're trying to do.
If I took a pay cut to be in One Piece, I would definitely be hesitant.
Oh,
yeah.
We would need to get paid for this show to take a pay cut first.
That's what I mean. I would, if I'm making Jamie Lee Curtis money, I'm not taking a pay cut to be in a couple episodes of a fucking Netflix One Piece show. That's not happening.
There are plenty of celebrities who go below market price to work on passion projects.
Name one big name that was in season one.
That was in season one.
Yeah.
Of One Piece.
Of One Piece. One big name in season one of One Piece.
Oh, fine. Okay.
You can't even name one.
I don't see how that changes anything.
And why do you think that is? Why do you think that is, Nate?
I don't know. Probably because they spent a whole lot of money on the sets. It seemed like a real expensive show to film.
It was a real expensive show. It took a really long time to shoot. It took a lot of time in the makeup seat for pretty much everybody except for the pink-haired kid. He just had to dye his hair. And none of these people got paid shit. You know they were, like, lowballed for this shit. Because what if One Piece live action had come out and everybody hated it?
Well, I mean, okay, it could have happened. It has a high chance of happening. I'll give you that, but it didn't. And now we have a pretty good fan base, a pretty good seedbed for this to take off. And you know what One Piece does when it takes off, Remy? It prints money left and right.
I mean, yes, obviously the brand is strong. There's no stronger brand in the world.
Sorry, Disney, you're out. One Piece is in.
Yes, and I will say, I am to this day still surprised how successful live-action One Piece is. You know, I gotta give it up. And I also have to say I'm still very impressed that Usopp is black in live-action One Piece. And in this new Netflix One Piece, Usopp is back to being white. So that is not great. I watched One Piece Fan Letter, a new One Piece short by Toei Animation. I'm not sure what the deal was. Maybe this is this is probably one of the 25th anniversary projects, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, because this is 25 years.
Oh, this is the big quarter century mark, huh?
Yeah, we did it.
Wow.
Way 1999.
To go, guys. Hey, let's have a little round of applause. Let's have a little round of applause for Oda. Way to go.
It's 1999. You're reading the first chapter of One Piece. You're in middle school. You don't know what a cell phone is yet. This is the 25th anniversary of One Piece. They put out a short. It's not about the crew. It is about a little girl who has written a fan letter to Nami, who has inspired her to, I don't know, I guess be brave or something.
That's usually how these things go. Be brave, be herself. I don't know, be adventurous.
Yeah.
Some kind of thing.
Be cool.
Yeah.
You know.
Be good to yourselves, dudes.
Be good. This is really weird. It took me a long time because it starts off very frenetic. I had no idea what to expect of this. I kind of thought this was just going to be a very divorced side story, kind of like removed from time. But like literally second one, we are placed in a very, very specific and important place in time in the One Piece chronology, which really threw me off because I had chosen to watch this with, let's say, non-One Piecers, and they were immediately out of it. Like it took maybe 1 minute to be like, yeah, I'm checking out. I don't know what the fuck is happening. Because this one is for the fans.
Well, as the title would suggest.
I guess so. I really thought this would be more of a broad appeal, but this one is like laser targeted. It is like Easter Day with the amount of eggs they've hidden all over the place. I mean, that is really, it reminded me what's so special about One Piece because they show, it's like 24 minutes long and there's like maybe 75 characters that make appearances, and every single one of them is like named with their own backstory and their own important part of One Piece lore, even if they have 2 seconds of screen time in this. it really bowled me over again just thinking about it, like, god damn. But this is really sweet. The main cast, Straw Hat Crew, don't really make an appearance. It's really just about side characters and this particular new character, who's this little girl who wants to give Nami her fan letter.
Now, do they address the fact that her choice in waifus is trash, and obviously she should be writing a fan letter to the best crew member, which is Usopp?
Nobody in universe likes Usopp.
It's because they're racist.
It's a little bit because they're racist. It's a little bit because he's like a huge asshole to everybody he meets. He's not chill in any way. He is the opposite of chill.
Yeah, I relate to him so much.
Yeah, I know. Outside of the universe of One Piece, he is very endearing, clearly. But if you had to hang out with him like all day, every day, I don't think you would be as enamored. Now, you say that, but like Nami is like him and Nami are the dynamic duo. They are the Shaggy and Scooby of One Piece.
Wait, which one's Shaggy and which one's Scooby?
Well, Nami is Scooby and Usopp is Shaggy because he's a little coward.
But Scooby's dumb to Shaggy's cowardice. I thought Nami was kind of smart. I thought that was her thing.
Yeah, she's smart, but she's like in way over her head.
Okay.
You know,
all right.
like when Scooby runs into a ghost and he's like, oh shit, I can't deal with this. I better go get somebody who can fight ghosts. That's Nobby's gag a lot of the time.
I see. They're both resourceful and practical in that way.
Yeah, and they run away from ghosts.
And they both run away from ghosts.
They both run away from ghosts.
I mean, wouldn't you?
I would, yes. Obviously, you wouldn't know, but there is a ghost fruit user, so they literally do run away from ghosts. This is a really sweet story. I shouldn't have been surprised because I do think the magic of One Piece is like, no matter what, this world, these characters, and like Oda's energy in particular, it's such a beautiful magic trick that he can make you like emotional and care about these people in this world in a way that like most anime never will achieve that kind of like emotional investment. But even in a 24-minute short about this little girl in a time period that is now way in the rearview mirror, like literally this takes place in the inside the 2-year gap, the time skip.
Oh, okay, it's within the time skip.
Yes, which I'm pretty sure was like 10 years ago, maybe, when that happened in the manga.
So this kid's an adult by this point.
Yes, definitely. Like mid-20s, probably.
How is Luffy still a teenager? Isn't he like 35 at this point?
If he aged in real time, he would be, yeah, probably early 30s right now.
I mean, I get it. He's a cartoon character. He has toon logic, like with how
no,
he
you
works.
Don't get it, Nate. You don't get it. He is a cartoon character.
He's a cartoon character.
He's a cartoon character.
Yeah.
Man, that Luffy, he's one character. I'll tell you what.
I'll tell you what.
This is really sweet. I honestly think... despite the evidence to the contrary, I do think like even if you don't like One Piece, I think you would enjoy this because it is just straight up a very sweet little self-contained story. And should be no surprise considering this is Toei and this is the 25th anniversary, so you're not allowed to fuck up. But this is a very beautiful little piece of animation. It looks really, really good. It is just 24 minutes of people giving their fucking S game.
Well, you gotta love that.
And it kicks ass. It kicks ass. It's really nice.
I mean, I think above all else, I appreciate good animation more than, you know, having to tie it to any...
Than One Piece?
Well, than One Piece for sure, yeah. At least for me.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. Although, you know, I'm going to say this right here. Some of the best animation clips I've ever seen are from One Piece and One Piece adjacent media. So I'm not saying it's not there. I'm just One Piece. It never clicked with me when it was convenient to get into. And now it is a daunting juggernaut to try and like swallow at this point. I find it intimidating. It drives my anxiety up the wall.
Well, I will say, first of all, that's bullshit. Everybody should just jump into One Piece. It's so easy. Like the once you get started, you won't stop. Like it'll be compulsory. But also, you are correct because some of the directors of the movies went on to do like the most important anime. I'm thinking specifically of like the movie One Piece: Baron Omatsuri and the Secret Island, which is my favorite One Piece movie by far. Came out in 2005 and was directed by Mamoru Hosoda.
Oh shit.
Yeah, who did Summer Wars?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know that guy? He did this before Summer Wars.
Summer Wars, how about the Digimon movie?
Yes, the Mirai, the Boy and the Beast, Wolf Children, the Girl Who Leapt Through Time, which is one of like
I love that movie.
A very important anime movie for me particularly. That was in 2006, which I've talked about being sort of the era where I was starting to think maybe anime is actually bad. And then a few different things happened, including like watching The Girl Who Leapt Through Time and being like, oh shit, you know, I think anime maybe is good. I don't know. I'll have to rethink this.
I mean, you were wrong. Anime was definitely bad and continues to be so.
Well, The Girl Who Leapt Through Time is good, so it's hard to say. And Baron Omatsuri and the Secret Island is also really fucking good. It's just a really good anime movie. It looks great. It looks really great.
Well, yeah. Hosoda does some really amazing stuff, and I really, like, think about it. I like the way he animates, like, people running through fields, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. No,
it's imagery that pops up in his movies, and he always makes it look really good.
Yes. Well, you know, it's running through a field. That's, like, one of the most classic anime moves ever.
Right?
Yeah.
And you know what? Grass, notoriously hard to animate and make it look, like, you know, detailed and good.
But you gotta do it.
You gotta do it.
You got to do it. You know why?
Why?
Seven Samurai.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Think about it.
I will think about it.
Think about that.
All right. What else you got?
Yeah, everybody go watch Fan Letter. It just looks great. You know what? The other thing about Fan Letter before I move on, I kind of thought this was going to be the big Studio Wit premiere. You know, because Studio Wit, if you'll remember, they announced they're doing the One Piece reboot.
Uh-huh.
Which, God, I think that's next year, maybe?
I don't know. I'm looking forward to that one. I think that if I'm going to jump in at any time, it may as well be the prestige series specifically meant to fast-track people through the earlier years of One Piece.
I do believe that is very much the point, yes. It was like, how do we get people to restart? All the people like you who are afraid of One Piece, how do we get them to watch One Piece now that they like the Netflix show? Because this Wit Studios project is also a Netflix project, so it very much is, like, very cynically exactly that. We need to capture the audience yet again.
Well, okay, you keep saying a Netflix project. I know that Netflix is, they're, like, fully producing the live action show.
Yes.
But the Studio Wit thing, are they just distributing it? Because I know that Netflix attributes a Netflix production, let's say, rather freely. They define that that status rather loosely. Yes.
That's true. I believe in this case they have specifically branded this as a Netflix product. I could be wrong, but I think that's true.
Because I know Netflix has their fingers in a lot of anime importing. We're getting a lot of like shows that are hitting Netflix before other networks, you know?
Yeah, they want to be an anime distributor, an American anime distributor, because basically now that Funimation is, I guess, rolled up into Crunchyroll, right? That's the only game in town.
Crunchymation.
And Crunchyroll sucks shit, which is the official position of this podcast. Well, Netflix also sucks shit. That is also the official position.
And so does Funimation, so it's really a trifecta.
Funimation absolutely sucks shit. R.I.P. Rest in piss.
All of you can rot.
It's always better to have two games in town than one, right?
Well, healthy competition is always good to have.
Yes, healthy competition. Anyway, I thought this was going to be the Wit Studios kind of debut to do like a warm-up short, you know, stretch their legs a little bit before they get down to business.
Mm-hmm.
But no, this was a Toei in-house Toei in-house project. Nevertheless, it looks fantastic. I'm sure the Wit one is going to look fantastic as well. Damn, I fucking love One Piece. One Piece kicks ass, man.
Well, I'll get there eventually, and I think a lot of other people will as well.
It's so dismissive. Well.
Well.
Yes, we don't have to talk about One Piece anymore. Yes, I watched something else. I watched, as I promised, I watched Arcane Season 2 on Netflix. Wow, what a coincidence.
They're not even paying us for this episode. Why are you doing this? Why are you giving them free advertising?
Well, I watched it on Netflix. I can't lie. That's where I watched it. I didn't want to.
We got to talk about that. We got to start lying to these people a lot more than we already are.
I watched it on Tubi.
Okay, I never watched the first season of Arcane, although I am well familiar, apparently, with everyone's love of the character Jinx.
Everybody loves Jinx.
Which you have described to me as it's Harley Quinn and the Joker just as one person.
Yes, essentially, yes, that is correct.
So it's not like I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, she's definitely up there. You know, she's not Ari, which is obviously everyone's weird League of Legends fetish character. But she's up there. She is fan favorite for sure. She's Harley Quinn. It's really hard to talk about her and not just get that out of the way. She's Harley Quinn. Does not make an appearance in the League of Legends in-universe girl pop band KDA, but she is pretty damn popular in the League of Legends universe.
Wait, so is KDA? That's like within the lore that band exists.
Yes, that is the that is the League of Legends girl band. That is Ari, and Ari is the front woman. It's Ari, Evelyn, Akali, and someone named Kaisa, who I don't know who that is. I don't play the game. I don't play that game. It's for children. Grow up and play Dota.
So then why did you watch Arcane?
I watched Arcane because season one, I'm morbidly curious about the new League of Legends Harley Quinn show, because there was a Dota show premiering at the same time. Coincidentally, from Studio Wit, I think. No, wait, that can't be true.
That can't be right.
Studio Mir, excuse me. It was Studio Mir who did stuff like The Legend of Korra, The Boondocks, X-Men 97.
Okay, all right, that makes a little bit more sense. That's kind of the catalog I would expect.
Yeah, the they're doing the new Devil May Cry project.
Oh, those guys. Okay. Did they do the Castlevania ones too?
I don't know. I don't think so. Coincidentally, they did do the Harley Quinn cartoon as well, which is a little strange.
Oh, Suicide Squad Isekai.
No, the
other, like, Harley Quinn cartoon.
The Harley Quinn where she's gay.
Oh, the HBO Harley Quinn cartoon.
Yeah. The much more popular, better one.
The Venture Brothers with a DC skin.
I guess so. King Shark gets a lot more respect in that show than he did on Isekai Suicide Squad.
That's not hard to do when they made him a...
I'm a little sore about that.
They made him a simpleton in Isekai Suicide Squad.
Essentially, like a non-verbal man-beast.
Which, is he not? I have very little understanding of the character of King Shark.
I'm not a King Shark aficionado or anything, but I do believe most of the time he is, like, you know, a fully sentient, sapient being who can, you know, freely communicate in English and possibly other languages. I don't know. He probably speaks.
How could he communicate in English? He has no lips.
He does. He has fish lips. I'm pretty sure. So, like, Aquaman speaks fish, right? So I'm sure King Shark also speaks fish.
No, King Shark speaks Esperanto. That's the official language of Atlantis. That's what they speak down
that,
there.
That DreamWorks movie?
What?
So I watched League of Legends Season 2 of the Jinx Harley Quinn-type show anime. And the reason I watched it was because I do not like League of Legends, but I do like animation.
Oh, okay. All right. So you're some kind of animation wonk.
Yes, I am, unfortunately. Animation is a cruel mistress, and yet I stick by it. And sometimes it's rewarding. Like, in this case, we were just talking about how we do not like 3D anime, and I think we have talked a lot about how, like, Western animation, 2D animation, just always feels at least a couple steps behind, like, traditional anime. And I feel like that is 100% reversed for 3D animation right now, because Arcane and both seasons, right, they're both 3D animations.
Mm-hmm.
But they are, in terms of just technical raw ability to create interesting movement and style and silhouette and texture and feel, it is miles and miles ahead of any 3D animation we have seen come out of Japan. I don't know why that is. I really don't.
I have some theories. I have some theories on it.
You do?
Yeah. I think a big part of it is just the fact that Hollywood for the last 20 years has gone not only all in on 3D animation, but has been actively trying to kill, like, a big budget 2D animation from raising its ugly head anywhere near a producer's office ever again. So what we've been left with is a landscape where creators are forced to innovate. Like, I hate to say it, but this is like the cool Western 3D animation that we're seeing with Arcane and Spider-Verse. And I don't know what's people seem to like that Wild Robot movie in terms of how it looked.
That's your third poll?
I don't know. Name another big one.
Another big 3D thing?
Yeah, a big acclaimed Western 3D animation.
I mean, gee, you could have said like any Pixar movie.
No, that's what I'm saying. The innovation we're seeing with Spider-Verse, specifically as my example, is a rejection of the Pixar style that is just become ubiquitous amongst the animation industry the last 20 years. Are you doing Pixar or are you riffing off of Shrek? Those are the two styles.
See. Yeah. Yeah. So I see what you mean. Okay. In that case, I would have said the last Ninja Turtles movie.
Another great example.
That's a direct refutation of the Pixar style.
And we talked about it. We talked about that one a few episodes back. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, quite a few.
Same category that I'm talking about.
Yes.
People trying to, and even, you know, then we're having a hard time breaking off of, now people are just trying to, you know, emulate what made Spider-Verse work. I don't think Arcane is doing that so much. They seem to be really focusing in on making their own, like, style of animation and the way they animate in 3D.
Oh, yeah.
Making that really tight and really, like, all right, this is what Arcane looks like. This is what makes it visually distinctive.
Yes.
All the clips I've seen looks great, you know. I just don't give a shit about League of Legends.
It has an incredibly strong sense of visual identity. I think that is by far the best thing about it. It comes out of the gate swinging real hard. These animators know what they want it to look like, and they do the fucking thing. They just do it.
Yeah.
And it's incredible. It has the very distinct, like, 3D feel. They're not trying to, and this isn't a diss on Spider-Verse, but they're not trying to create an emulated version of a 2D animation style, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They are working with a lot of depth. You know, there are polygons on the screen. We could tell. But it looks painterly. It looks like they are applying coats of paint to moving models in a way that is, like I said before, I guess, textured, right?
Right, yes.
It has stuff in it. It feels like alive. The way light works feels intentional in a way that a lot of, like, 3D animation doesn't. It feels like the use of color and color placement and the way that clothes fold and move, which used to be just like, look at how many hairs we can simulate at once. this feels like a refutation of that idea, because they say we're not trying to simulate the way clothes move, like fabric simulations, like they do in the graphics card demonstrations, you know?
Uh-huh.
Hey, look, with the new like RTX card, look what happens when we drop a sheet in real time. The show is not interested in that.
Right.
The show does everything with an intentionality that shines through and makes it feel special. And that's what I think is really, really great about Arcane. It is made by artists, and they are allowed to just do the fucking thing. And it shows in every frame.
It's too bad that it's consumed by the worst people on Earth.
And I don't even think the problem is that it's a League of Legends product. I don't even think that's the problem with it. I think the problem is that they let the artists do everything. And artists, I don't want to generalize art. Please don't get pissed at me for saying something like this. But the artists who are doing this are visual artists. They're not necessarily directors or cinematographers or script writers, frankly, blocking types. Every scene is too fast. There is no patience between shots for anything. Like, nothing is ever still. The time between cuts and scenes, I don't think there is a scene that lasts longer than like 3 minutes. Honestly, it is frenetic in the pacing. The scripting is not very good. It's a lot of very bad dialogue, a lot of really awkward plotting. I feel like all the joints are really exposed. There's not a lot of artistry to anything outside of the visuals. A lot of times the way the scenes are shot, the cinematography itself of a scene is not bad, but it is of the music video style. You know what I mean by that?
Uh-huh, yeah.
It is trying to be flashy, and it's not trying to evoke emotion in the same way somebody would shoot something in live action. I think that is by far the weakest link in this entire project, is that nobody took the time to sit down and really like block this out in the way that it wants to be, because it is clearly pulling in two directions. One is incredibly stylish music video. The other is like HBO prestige drama. And it wants to be both of those things, and it cannot be, because it is tearing itself apart trying to do both of those things at the same time.
I can only imagine like the lack of, like, you need moments of peace to accentuate tension, right? And excitement. You need to pace these things out.
You gotta have patience enough for like a scene to play out. If everything is just moving, then all this like incredible heavy drama that you're trying to get through feels like it doesn't have any weight to it, because it feels like you're not patient enough to let us absorb like what's supposed to be happening.
Right.
You know, a big part of Arcane, and especially this season two, is that like the dissolution between these estranged sisters and like what is family, right? They're doing this very Shakespearean style of like family drama on the stage of like political intrigue. It's connecting, you know, this upstairs downstairs like class war down to the relationship between two estranged sisters, and so that all of that's spinning around, and it's really trying to make you feel the weight of the dissolution of a family is the same as the dissolution of a state, right? And that's heavy, and that's hard, and people fuck that kind of shit up all the time, but it is absolutely possible to do, and, you know, HBO managed to do it a lot back in the golden age, and this just is, it feels like a pale imitation. Like people who read a book about making an HBO show and then like got their most talented artistic friends to like illustrate it for them. That's Arcane. And it sucks, because I'm going to keep watching it because it looks so fucking good. And frankly, I want these artists to have the world. I want them to have everything. But I also want them to have a competent director and cinematographer on staff. I think that would really boost them up to a level that they deserve with the amount of work they've put in, I think that would really help.
Well, these things come with experience, right? You know, obviously they've made a successful first season. Season two is gearing up to be, you know, well received, it seems,
well,
by people.
If I'm watching it, then lots of people are watching it.
Yeah.
Because they didn't exactly like have me foaming at the mouth for it, you know?
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe we'll see them hit their stride if they get another season or whatever project they move to after this. But I can definitely envision like the problems that you're talking about with letting the animators go a little wild with how they compose these scenes.
Yeah, these fucking inkheads, man. They can't do anything right.
All right.
Stick to your Cintiqs. And stay out of the writer's room, you know what I mean?
Next, they're going to want to unionize.
Oh, God, that'll be the day.
Oh, geez. Okay, why don't we take a break? Once again, second half. The anime.
And
Death Spiral.
Spiral.
Oh, boy. Okay. So, Remy, we established at the beginning of the show that it was my shame this week that I didn't engage with any anime. I did not read any anime. I did not watch any anime, unfortunately. I recently caught up on my kind of bundle of manga that I follow regularly, and now I'm out of my back catalog to read. So
this fool drained his tank.
I drained my tank. I need a top up. I need you to loan me some. I need to stick my hose down there and siphon some anime out of you.
Well, have you listened to this anime podcast, Anime Death Spiral? Because man, they're giving out recommendations left to right.
I don't know. Those two guys seem kind of iffy. I'm not sure their politics are really all on the up and up.
Well, look, don't go and start on episode one, but pick something like in the middle, maybe, where maybe they're talking about something you already like.
Yeah.
You know, in the meantime, I guess I can try to pitch you on some stuff. You know, I've read a few things recently and not so recently.
Now previously, you know, you did recommend... and I still cannot remember the full title, but the Yankee girl and the preppy girl who say weird things to each other.
Asukeban, a transfer student, and their silly little game.
Yes, that one. And I really enjoyed that.
Kicks ass.
I don't know if you have anything that you think would be that I would like in a similar fashion or is up that same alley. I'm open to suggestions. What do you got?
Okay, you're looking for something a little cute and silly.
You know, that's what you're saying? That's one thing. I'm open to a lot of different stuff, but I do generally like that kind of thing. Yes.
Okay. Well, let's say, okay, for this suggestion, let's go with that. Something a little cute and silly.
Okay.
Now, I did previously recommend Tsumiki Ogami and the Strange Everyday Life, which is the one about the boy who gets the crush on the wolf girl.
Did we talk about that a while ago?
We briefly talked about that.
I don't remember that one, but it sounds cool.
Yes, I mean, that is one, you know, these, I have a lot of ones that are like that. That one's very cute, very light, you know, it's got a lot of like school days stuff, kind of this dude trying to figure out his deal with this wolf girl. There's obviously I Want to Do Bad Things With You, which is something we talked about a while ago, about the sort of like very frail boy who recruits the very tall girl to be his henchman, and she slowly falls in love with him.
Love that premise. That's great.
Yes, yes. As he tries to get revenge on his perfect older brother. A lot of mine that are cute and light are also horror and violent, which makes it a little hard.
I'm not sure that means what you think it means, cute and light.
You know, they go hand in hand sometimes. You know, like I talked about a long time ago. You remember I read Kaya-chan wa Kawakunai about the little girl who defeats ghosts. She's sort of like an accidental mob psycho. It's very cute most of the time, and then sometimes it is really scary and horrifying. But I really like that one.
That sounds pretty good. A mob psycho, like, that was a good read, a while ago.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't mind that it gets really porny, there's the Otome no Harawata Hoshi no Iro by Yura Ishito, which is the guy, the Volcel in the School of Horny Alien Girls. I still think that one's really funny and cute for the most part. It's a quick read.
Okay.
That guy also just started one that is not porny at all, so maybe that's better, called Machi and Obito, which is about a striver girl with a chip on her shoulder moving to Tokyo to go to an elite school to prove that, like, country hicks can be super smart, too.
Now that is hitting some bells for me.
Yeah, that's it? Okay, yeah. That's the one. When she moves in, a weird girl suddenly starts squatting in her apartment. Who keeps claiming to be a ninja.
Okay. And it's somehow about a genius redneck and a out of time ninja living in Tokyo.
Yeah, as they go to a super elite cram school and learn to the ninja girl doesn't learn much. The super uptight, like, hick genius girl learns to, like, not be frumpy and an asshole to everyone around her because she's smarter than them. It's that kind of story.
Okay. All right. She learns to bring her down, to lower herself to everybody else's level.
To not be an asshole. And stuff like, in chapter 6, she gets her first haircut ever.
Wait, ever?
Yeah, because she's sort of like, you know, she's that kind that's like, haircuts are illogical. Like, that kind of thing.
Does she actually logic it out, or does she just say haircuts are illogical?
No, she's like, why would I ever get a haircut? Caring about the style of your hair is illogical. It doesn't make any sense. And then she gets her haircut, and she's like, oh, I look cute now. That's cool. I didn't think about that part of it.
Incels hate this one simple trick.
Yeah, it really is like that. I really like that one. It's only like maybe 10, 14 chapters in, something like that. And it's very cute. The lots of fail girl foibles going on.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm going to make a list here. Drop that in so I can read it later.
I will put it on your list. Is there any other flavors you're interested for getting on your list?
Yeah. Let's pivot here. Let's
give me something else.
Let's go for a challenge. Now, I am thoroughly enjoying Dan to Dan, both reading the manga and watching the anime as it comes out.
Of course you are.
Of course I am. Other option. You have to like Dan to Dan.
We simply must stand.
But I am a known and vocal shonen hater. Do you have anything else that I could take a look at that has that same like spark that Dan to Dan has that makes me care about it?
You offbeat shonen.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's so many. There's so many. You know, now that Chainsaw Man, I think we talked about it. I talked about Lily Men a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even last episode.
We did talk about last episode. Yeah.
Yeah. It's part of sort of the Chainsaw children are coming. They're coming of age, and we've got lots of people trying to find new things in shonen. You know, Dan to Dan, Hell's Paradise, and Chainsaw Man, Jujutsu Kaisen, right? Those were a new vanguard, right, of the new shonen. And some other ones, but I forget. And now we're kind of reaping the benefits. I would say there are different versions of that. There are things like Goku Rakugai, which I really, really like, and is getting more and more popular, by Sano Yuto, is gorgeous. It is, like, truly gorgeous. But it still has that sort of kind of shonen-y vibe. I would say it feels a lot closer to a Jujutsu Kaisen than a Dan to Dan, but it's got flavors that are very unique to itself. That one is going to be big, like we talked about in our prophecy episode. That one is going to be big. Like, there is no question.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the art here, some of the covers for the volumes, and it's tight. It's a real distinct looking style.
It's a looker.
Yeah. Very beautiful. This guy does great eyes. I shouldn't say guy. This artist does great eyes. I don't know if this is drawn by a woman or not.
We've got been rereading a bunch of stuff, so I'm going to have to like go back a little bit. I did talk about Gachi Akuta before. Obviously, mm-hmm. I think that is literally one of the best, not just the best looking, but like truly unique and special shonen that's going right now. That is, I cannot understate how much I love Gachi Akuta. I think that is shonen par excellence. Man, I read a lot of shit. I still think After God, which I'm not sure if I could count as a shonen or not, I still think that is also one of like the biggest and best things going on right now. Chojin X by Ishida Sui, you know, his follow-up to Tokyo Ghoul, is incredibly unique and fantastic. Like, truly, truly great. You know, his art style is just bonkers incredible. Just constantly jaw-dropping. I still just look at some of the later panels in Tokyo Ghoul and just be like, how? How? How did somebody do that?
You know, I'm going to jump in here and give myself a recommendation.
Oh, shit.
Based off of your list.
This is unprecedented.
And... this is something that's on my mind because a friend of the show recently finished reading through Dorohedoro. And I think that I got to read Die Dark.
Oh, well, of course you got to read Die Dark. I didn't even think about that. Yes, you should be reading Die Dark already.
I wasn't. I think it's going to the top of the list.
Die Dark is fantastic. Everybody should be reading Die Dark. Obviously, Kyu Hayashida, as we've talked endlessly, is one of the best to ever do it. There is no point even bleeding on because you should already be doing that. I have a lot of things that I'm not sure I could call shonen. I think those are my shonen recommendations. How about that?
Okay. All right. Well, give me one more and I'm going to leave it chef's choice, omakase style. No requirements, just anything that you think that I specifically have to read.
Well, there's so many that we've talked about endlessly that you have not read. You've just been ignoring for some reason. Like, To You, the Immortal, which, again, is one of the best manga, just period. Like, it already is one of the best. It's a classic. You should be reading that. Like, I'm mad at you for not reading that.
I've read the first chapter about 5 or 6 times.
And too sad. You're too sad to move on.
You're joking, but it is like genuinely such a tight piece of fiction just as a like self-contained short story. It gets me every time. And it's hard to like build up the will to keep investing in like, oh, wow, if this is going to be like the tone of our immortality story, that's going to be heavy.
It is heavy. But it is fun in a lot of places, and it's heavy in a lot of places in that way that, like, truly great works often are. It is perfect. I mean, it's beautiful. It's like a truly beautiful, moving piece of art. There are strange things, you know. I particularly like, if you want to go back and read some weird old stuff, there's stuff like Sasori, which is where... the really great classic Japanese women's prison exploitation movie, Prisoner 701 Scorpion, is based on.
Yes, and I have read that. That was one.
Oh, you
of
did
your,
read that.
Yeah, that was one of your very first recommendations to me when we started this show.
Oh, way long time ago.
Long, long time ago. I did read through a bunch of the Sasori chapters.
Sasori kicks ass, and Female Prisoner 701, Scorpion, like, there's like 3 of those movies, and they are so fucking good. That is like 70s Japanese action done masterfully. Like, just awesome shit. Obviously, I think you should be reading everything that Nihei Tsutomu does, you know, the Blame guy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you haven't finished Blame, you should just finish Blame.
I should finish Blame.
Here's a big one. This is actually fairly important for manga itself. And kind of in a shonen-y way. This is like an important manga I don't hear talked enough about. Zetman by Katsura Masakazu, who is now doing Tiger and Bunny inexplicably, because Zetman is like...
Oh, he's the Tiger and Bunny guy.
Work. Yeah, and Tiger and Bunny is like just a gag thing about superheroes. But Zetman is like a heavy work. It is like... It is a book.
That is one of the things that you've listed as possible major inspirations for Chainsaw Man.
I think there is no doubt in my mind that Zetman was on Fujimoto's mind when he was coming up with like a bunch of the stuff from Chainsaw Man.
Your favorite manga artist.
I mean, there is something to that. Obviously, Fujimoto's pulling from a lot of movies. It's pretty nakedly... open about that kind of stuff, but I do think if you get down to it, and he is, for whatever reason, I think he is a little shyer about like his manga inspirations, but there's, yeah, again, there's no doubt in my mind that Zetman was in conversation here.
Hey, what is,
and Zetman's just like crazy.
What is the basic premise of Zetman? Oh, the silence, he has to think about it.
It's hard to say. Zetman is sort of, it is like, I mean, the really hammy way to say it is it's a subversion of like kind of old school shonen in a way, where a character who is sort of on the periphery of society defends the innocent from the shadows, almost like a, you know, like what if Batman was a homeless teenager?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If I had to describe it in the stupidest possible way, Zetman is like, what if Spawn was Kamen Rider.
Okay. That's funny because at certain points in Spawn's life, he does basically become a tokusatsu character himself.
I mean, yes, he does. He does. But like the way that he is specifically situated on the fringes of society, you know, very famously like in the beginning of Spawn where he lives in a trash pile with the homeless men,
mm-hmm.
In New York. And he kills cops and punks who come to like hunt homeless people for sport. That's a big thing in Spawn lore for a while. That kind of like grunginess and the way that Spawn is constantly fighting off not his violent urges. Spawn is constantly fighting off his virtues.
Well, he's an agent of the devil trying to enact good where he can in an evil world.
Yes, but at the beginning of Spawn, he's constantly like, I'm not a good guy. I'm not out here like playing good guy superhero. I'm out here because I want revenge. That's the only reason I'm still alive. But then he can't help himself but like be a good guy, you know? That vibe.
Is he the mythical anti-hero people keep talking about?
Yes. Spawn is the mythical anti-hero, even though he just becomes a hero. Actually, pretty much right after he gets out of hell, he becomes
a regular hero. He literally beats up Satan to get out of hell. He doesn't have a whole lot strings tying him down at that point. They contrive other things to kind of bring it back home, but you know, he did beat up the devil. I'm just gonna say.
Yeah, after he beats up the devil, it pretty much comes down to like, well, now I have to beat up God.
Yeah.
That's sort of round two.
Which is cool and awesome.
I mean, it is cool, but like I don't know if you've read any King Spawn, but it doesn't have the same energy. Spawn has like a team now. He's got like a guy in the chair, as the Marvel lingo goes.
He's got a Spawn family, much the same way Batman has a Bat family.
Exactly. Yes, including like junior detectives and shit, which is just lame.
He's got Robin Spawn and a Red Hood Spawn.
Spawnlet.
Yeah, Spawnlet. Lady Spawn.
Yeah. Well, for a second there were a bunch of Spawns.
Kind of like there were a bunch of Venoms.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to the other Spawns. There was definitely like a Night Spawn for a while.
Man, you know, once you think about it, I cannot quantify the amount of damage that Todd McFarlane has done to the cultural zeitgeist of comics.
Yeah, but also Spawn fucking ruled, dude. Like, I will go to bat for early Spawn. I think it really fucking hits super hard.
I'm not saying Spawn doesn't rule. I'm just saying at what cost, man? At what cost?
Well, we were just talking about the Chainsaw Children, right? I think, like, Chainsaw Man came out and blew a lot of people's minds. Like, this is something crazy that we haven't really seen before in this space. And Spawn did the same thing. And just like Spawn and Chainsaw Man, now we got the posers. We've got the army of posers descending.
The Slim Shadys standing
yes,
up.
Yes, exactly. The stands. and some of them are good, and some of them are the Punisher.
Now, where does Zetman fall into that spectrum?
Well, like I said, I think Zetman is kind of the Spawn. What do you think inspired Todd McFarlane to write Spawn?
I think specifically it's because they wouldn't, like, Marvel wouldn't let him draw Spider-Man ripping a man's head off. I think that's literally it. Todd, Spider-Man, he doesn't like kill people. You can't have him rip a kid's head off. You can't do that.
Do you think Todd, like, legitimately, do you think Todd had a black suit Spider-Man pitch that turned into Spawn?
No. I think that Todd has gone on record saying that he took the black suit Spider-Man idea and extrapolated Spawn from, or not Spawn, Venom from it. Because, you know, he created Venom, too.
That makes sense. I did not know that, but that makes
100%
sense.
Todd McFarlane created Venom, and as soon as he quit, quotes around quit working for Marvel, he formed Image Comics and was like, I'm going to form my own comic company with blood and guts and hookers and blackjack.
And fair pay and artist ownership.
Yeah, I guess something like that, you know. But really, it's about all the cool, awesome, like, killing and stuff that Marvel wouldn't let him do.
It didn't always work out for the best, but, you know, that is also a big part of the story, I think. We should keep in there. It's not all I want Spider-Man to kill a cop.
You know, I like to think that some well-meaning business manager said to Todd, like, hey, you want to own your own stuff, right? He's like, oh yeah, whatever. Just let me draw Spawn ripping this guy's arms off. Whatever. Yeah. I don't know. Pay the inkers whatever they want. I don't give a shit.
If that's what it takes for me to draw this CIA guy killing the president.
Yeah. I think it's just that. I think that Todd wanted to make a studio that let him draw whatever he wanted, and he was willing to pay his associates and his employees well enough to make it a lucrative thing and willed it into existence. So,
okay, well then what is Dark Horse? What's the point of Dark Horse then?
Dark Horse continues so that Mike Mignola can keep pitching shitty Hellboy movies.
that's it.
Yeah.
That's the only reason it exists.
Yep.
I've been reading, you know, as I do, I'm never not reading Berserk. It just comes and goes. But the latest readings of Berserk for me have been the Dark Horse translations.
Oh, I didn't know that they were taking over the official translation.
Well, they published, I mean, they've been publishing English translation of Berserk for most of our lives. But for completely ignorance of the law reasons, I may have accidentally read some of the Evil Geniuses translation the very first time I read Berserk, which is an unfortunate, you know, just an unfortunate event that happened. I think the translations in the Dark Horse version are much better. They're much more artful, and they include a lot less slurs. So good stuff all around. But they do include the back flap of the paperback version of the books,
mm-hmm.
including the little Dark Horse blurbs. And they are some of the lamest shit you have ever read in your entire life. Just trying to pitch Berserk, which I admit, that's a hard pitch. You know, you're in the 90s, you're Dark Horse, you have this thing, you have Berserk in your hands, and you're supposed to sell that to a Western audience.
Come watch Guts and his epic struggle against ultimate evil.
No, I wish it was like that. I wish it was like that. Hold on, I will read you a couple of these.
Okay, oh no.
These are so bad. Let's pull one from the early run. So this is the back of volume 5 of the Dark Horse Berserk release. Let me just read you the blurb.
Okay.
He is Guts, the Black Swordsman, a warrior of legendary prowess, relentless, fearless, merciless, as cold and brutal as the iron of the massive sword he wields, and bent on revenge against the unholy forces that have branded him for sacrifice. I mean, so far, so good. I mean,
sure.
It's not how I would have said it, but it's pretty good. Especially Griffith, one of the demon lords of the God Hand. But Griffith was once a man, once the leader of the Band of the Hawk, a renowned cadre of elite fighters with a young guts as its fiercest champion. Though forged in a crucible of cruelty and violence, nothing could prepare Guts for a confrontation with Nosferatu Zod, a superhuman beast
who slaughters
Guts' comrades as easily as a scythe cuts wheat. Even Guts and Griffith are no match for the Abomination's power, but something Griffith wears around his neck may well be. Created by Kentaro Miura, Berserk is maniacal manga to the max. Relentless, harrowing, and gruesomely funny, and the inspiration for the popular anime series. If you're looking for graphic fiction tied up with a pretty pink bow, you'd better run for the hills, because Berserk will show you what you could do with that bow.
Oh my god. That was like the back of like a bad 80s sword and shield fantasy, you know, that's entirely filmed on camcorder in Griffith Park in LA.
Yes, that is pretty much how they were selling Berserk.
They were marketing it as a schlocky 80s like video store rental.
I'm not sure that's the worst way to do it. It's again, it's not how I would have done it personally, but that's the tone that they were setting. They're like, okay, you're a little white child.
Well, that was never me, but okay.
I'm speaking in general terms of obviously. You're like reading, I don't know, you're reading Naruto, right? And then there's like something on the shelf next to Naruto and you pick it up and like one of the clerks comes over and you're like, hey, that's not for you. And then you wait for them to go away so you can get a little bit of it. And it says some shit like that. You're like, yes, please. Obviously, yes. If it said something like the epic Shakespearean medieval military fantasy based on Macbeth, right? Do you think a child would be like super into that?
Well, probably not a cool child, probably not a child with a lot of friends. But then again, most Berserk enjoyers, most Berserk mega fans don't seem to have a lot of social skills to begin with.
Here's another one. Created by Kentaro Miura, Berserk is a bloodstained manga juggernaut. Equal parts savage violence, gruesome horror, and black humor. Packed inside a flaming powder keg and rolled downhill into a crowd of terrified civilians. Let the weak-kneed get out of the way, cause Berserk ain't about to give up any ground.
It sounds like Berserk is the name of a monster truck. It's about to run over a bunch of like school buses.
Yeah, that's what they were. That's how they were advertising it.
Wow. And how long? That was from the fifth volume.
That one was from volume six, which is like almost halfway through Golden Age.
All right. How did we get here? You were giving me manga recommendations, and we just ended up talking about Berserk.
Because of Dark Horse. It was Dark Horse. Dark Horse did this. This was Dark Horse's fault. Okay. Yeah. So I think that's good. Those blurbs, I mean.
Yeah. Great blurbs. The best blurbs.
No, those are great blurbs. I think those are really good blurbs.
I wish someone would say that kind of stuff about our show.
That it's like not your grandma's anime podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good marketing angle, right? We could go for Monster Energy Drink Addicts as our main demographic.
Here's another one. Berserk is pedal to the metal manga madness, a raging blur of savage action, grisly horror, and dark humor that has inspired legions of rabid fans and rendered aghast hordes of terrified civilians. Duck and cover and look out for flying glass, because Berserk is going, well, berserk.
Oh, I thought it was gonna say he's going, well, something that rhymed with glass.
Ass?
You can't say that on television.
Ass, grass, or cat cash? Wait, what? Okay, all right. We're done here. This is enough.
Yeah.
Okay, go read that shit, and you'll have lots of really good manga, and then I will give you many, many more good manga after that. And I'm talking to you, listener. Read some fucking good manga. I cannot believe how many times I have to say this, but read the good shit, please, and not the bad shit.
I mean, I don't want to pat ourselves on the back too much here, but just listening to some of the other, let's say, recommendation venues available to the common man for this kind of thing, we literally are out here giving you the most eclectic and best collection of information regarding anime and manga. There's no doubt about that. We are talking about this stuff on such a higher level than most other anime podcasts.
Yeah, we're like collegiate. Yep. We're like collegiate anime recommenders. We're not high school.
No, we are. We're an elite academic institution regarding anime and manga, and people should give our recommendations and our words the kind of gravitas and authority that they deserve. That's all I'm saying.
Yes, absolutely. Of course. I will say, you know, if you just Google anime recommendations or go to the subreddit or whatever, you are going to get absolute dog shit. I'm not even saying we are like out here giving you the super deep cuts, like professional grade shit, but stick with us. You're going to read good things and not bad things. I can promise you that.
Don't you want that? Don't you want to read good things and not bad things?
Don't you want to read good things? Are you frustrated when you read bad things and you wanted to read a good thing?
We're offering you the solution to all of your life's problems, probably.
Yeah, and you know what? Even if you want to read some bad things, I'll give you the good bad things. I'll give you that too. If you want trash, I'll give you the trash.
We'll give you trash. We'll give you the tastiest trash, the best trash.
You don't have to settle. That's all I'm saying. That's my pitch. I'm done.
Are we done here?
I'm done here.
Okay.
I don't need to explain myself to you.
Okay, handsome and beautiful listeners, thank you once again for sticking around, I assume. Please go leave us comments somewhere. We upload these episodes on YouTube. Once again, we ask you for engagement. We love it. I reply.
We love engagement.
I reply to every comment on the TikToks. That is a promise, and it's something that I've kept.
Sure. Yet again, I do have to say, like, just go and subscribe to this podcast on, like, your friends' phones, on their computers when they're not looking. Go to the library. Go to the Apple Store, go to Best Buy, subscribe to this podcast on those computers.
Go commit crimes for us. Don't actually do it, but, you know, help us out here.
Just any of it. Or just tell somebody to listen to it, I guess. Like, literally, that's the only way people actually, like, hear about podcasts is if you, like, make them listen to it. So, I don't know.
Listen, tell your grandma about the podcast because she's bound to have better taste than you.
This ain't your grandma's berserk.
Okay.
Bye. Bye. What do I prefer, stand powers or ninja techniques? I think I prefer stand powers pretty much every time.